Welcome back, ladies, gents, to the wrestling podcast. That is wrestling spelled W-R-S-T-L-I-N-G. We're talking all of the graps without the E. You know the deal by now, people. Me and G, we're not anti-E, we're simply pro-wrestling. And we got a fun two-pronged attack for you this week. We're talking about pro-wrestling magic, and we're going to be talking about Impact Wrestling's Hard to Kill pay-per-view with a special guest from the Inside the Ropes family, none other than lead writer of ITRWrestling.com, the vaunted wrestling journalist, Gary Cassidy. That's coming up in the second part of the show. My name's Liam, this guy's Gareth.
Hey!
And you, my friends, are on the Inside the Ropes podcast network. We thank you, as always, for your time. G-Money, let's just jump straight into it. Pro Wrestling Magic is a relatively new promotion, certainly to myself. I don't know if you'd come across them prior to this.
No, it's all new to me.
Yeah, and very exciting as a result. They are a US indie based on the East Coast, as I understand it.
Yeah, New Jersey.
That's right, yeah. Been around since 2015 and hosted some really big names on their shows. You know, likes of Cody Rhodes has been on there. Tommy Dreamer has been on there. Ace Romero actually was on this show as well. So, you know, some decent caliber guys. And actually, some of the independent talent that perhaps you don't see elsewhere but are certainly good value, and that was one of my big takeaways from this show, which we'll get into in just a second. But so we were looking at Kingdom Come 5, and this was a pretty jam-packed card actually. The Dark Arts title tournament, which was a four-man tournament in one evening to crown a Dark Arts champion. We also had a Pro Wrestling Magic title match and a Pro Wrestling Magic Junior Heavyweight title match. So let's just jump straight into this. Gareth, you actually live-tweeted along with this one, which seemed like a lot of fun. What did you make of the show?
I had such a good time watching this. It was such a pleasant surprise. I think it's really easy to think where we watch so much, we're like, oh, we know who all the standout
right.
wrestlers are in the States.
Yes.
And it was just such a pleasant surprise to watch the show and just be so impressed with so many people and be like, holy crap, like, how have I not seen this person before?
Absolutely.
So I think it just speaks to the depth of the US indie wrestling scene.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. Who are you most impressed with then? Talk us through some of the guys.
I really loved Darius Carter.
Me too. Wasn't he cool? Yeah.
He's the guy that I think jumped out at me the most on this card and that I think has a huge future ahead of him wherever he may end up. So he was a part of the Dark Arts title tournament on this show. So I thought he was really good. Both participants in the junior heavyweight title match surprised me. Like, that match was wonderful.
Yeah, that one actually felt, to me, it felt very sort of noughties CZW, noughties ROH in terms of, you know, reasonably smallish, quite flippy guys. But actually what came out of it was really unexpected, you know, kind of moves that you don't see. I think so often these days we've been spoilt in terms of high-flying wrestling. You kind of feel like, oh, we've seen it all. But I felt like there was loads of stuff in this one that caught me completely off guard. And it really did feel like going back and grabbing a tape and seeing something completely new for the first time. So I was really impressed with this one.
Absolutely. You know, and then we got to see old ROH competitor Azrael in the tournament as well.
How cool was that?
It was real fun seeing him as well.
Yes.
And then the main event, Pro Wrestling Magic heavyweight title. I really liked the Meadowlands Monster. I think he's got something.
Yeah.
And I'd never seen Smiley before that was in that. And I thought he was he was good value as well.
Yeah. Isn't it crazy that, I mean, I'm just looking at the card here. And aside from Ace Romero and Casey Navarro, but outside of that, I don't think I was familiar with practically anybody, apart from Azrael as well, of course. How can that possibly be? I feel like I spend my life digesting professional wrestling, a lot of which comes from North America. And you've got a whole card here populated with really good guys, and I haven't heard of any of them. It's amazing and actually quite inspiring. You know, it makes me want to go and dig deeper into the scene because there's clearly more diamonds in the rough waiting to
Absolutely.
Be found.
Absolutely. One of the things, you know, that you do worry about, like, once you get past the well-known top-tier indie companies, you think like, oh man, like, I worry that the drop off in talent is going to be steep.
Yeah.
But it really felt like there was nobody on this card that let the side down at all.
No.
I just went away so impressed with the level of talent of everybody involved here. I think it just speaks volumes about how many talented guys there are out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And even when you see so many people being signed up now, and you think, you know, how is the scene going to continue? Well, for however many guys get signed, another 10 spring out. The independent scene in the US is Hydra, effectively. And, you know, even just looking at this tournament, you know, the four guys in it, Darius Carter, TJ Crawford, Azriel, Everett Cross, they're all brilliant. These are all people that I want to see wrestle again. We've spoken about Darius already. I actually really enjoyed TJ Crawford. I thought he looked really, really good. And it was so nice to see Azriel again. What did he wrestle as in Ring of Honor? Was he Azriel in that as well? Or did he start off as something different? I forget.
He was something else.
He was Angel Dust, wasn't he?
Yes.
Yes, there you go. Very cool to see him. He hasn't missed a beat, actually. He'd be an interesting person to talk to, actually. Maybe we'll have to see if we can hook that up.
Well, that would be good.
That would be good, wouldn't it? Okay. Well, if you're listening, Azriel.
He's got a lot of stories to tell.
Get in touch, please. What did you make of the overall presentation for this show? Because from my perspective, I felt like they were trying to do something different. There were lots of little tweaks on what you normally expect from a US wrestling show. So I'm interested to get your take on it.
I really liked what they're doing here. I think it works really well. I love that they have the ramp up to the ring. Mm. That's been like a long time favorite of mine. I love seeing that. I think it just really adds to fun bits you can do.
Can I just jump in, actually, because there was a part of this and I forget who was wrestling. Oh, it was Ace Romero and Casey Navarro, and I believe one of the owners of Magic was on commentary, and it looked like Romero was about to put Casey Navarro through the stage, sort of ECW Taz Bam Bam Bigelow style, and this guy on commentary was going nuts, like, please don't put them through my stage, please don't put them through my stage. I really enjoyed that. It was good stuff. Actually, I should point out as well, that match in particular was really, really good. Nice to see Ace Romero in a slightly more long-form match than what we're used to seeing him do on Impact. So really good stuff. Anyway, sorry, back to your point.
Yeah, I really love that style of stage setup, which I don't think you necessarily see a lot outside of big promotions. Mm. Maybe it's just the financial burden of executing that.
Well, we nearly found out.
I really liked the gong that they use in lieu of a bell.
What a nice touch.
So I don't know, I can't remember if I tweeted this, but what the thing that it reminded me of, that it's kind of evolved to be like their trademark, it reminds me a lot of Attack Pro Wrestling here, where they don't use a bell, but they have the crowd say ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's just become such a big part of the show now. Like, it started off out of necessity, but, you know, obviously now they could 100% have a bell if they wish, but I love that they've gone their own unique way, and Pro Wrestling Magic have obviously done the same here.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's very good stuff, definitely.
What were some of the sort of production aspects that spoke to you then?
Well, I think everything that you've just touched upon was great, and I like that they kind of have their own lore with things. So, you know, it's the dark arts, and they sort of refer to the whole thing as the kingdom. You know, it's just the general setting that they put across. Yes. It's very unique. I like that it's specific to that. And my overriding feeling when I was watching the show is I'd really like to go see a Magic show live. It just felt like a really good show to be at live.
The kind of the building they were running in kind of reminds me of venue that I've gone to see all my favorite pro wrestling shows.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. I just thought it was really neat. Look,
good lighting setup as
really
well.
Really great lighting setup. And I thought they did well from an overall production standpoint. You know, the camera work was pretty decent. It was very reminiscent of the sort of tape trading days of the US independence scene, I thought, anyway, or even arguably even early Ring of Honor, that sort of thing. And, you know, that all become even better in time, but as an overall experience, I really enjoyed it. It did feel like watching an independent wrestling show from the comfort of my living room, which is exactly what I wanted. And yeah, fully on board now. So having not heard of Magic prior to this, I'm definitely keen to keep an eye on them going forward, particularly with someone like Darius Carter, who looks like we're kind of buying low here. This is a fella that's going to go somewhere. So, you know, let's keep an eye on him for sure.
I really enjoyed the kind of vitriol that the commentators had for the Meadowlands Monster as well.
Definitely. Where are the Meadowlands? That's what I want to know.
I have no idea. I think it must be a New Jersey thing. Because isn't there, like, I think there's like a wrestling venue like the Meadowlands as well.
Do you know what it reminded me of? There's a place in the city that Gareth and I hail from in Wiltshire. And there's a place called The Valley, and it's situated in quite a rough part of town, and it was always a case of, you know, nobody comes back from the valley, and, you know, the Meadowlands sound a very similar daunting prospect to me.
Until I saw his name written out, I thought every time they were saying the Metal Hands Monster.
Oh, I would have been even more on board with that. The Metal Hands Monster. Can that happen? Is that possible?
Maybe we can get him to change his
name. That's Tama Tonga now, isn't it? He's nicked some Tai Chi's Vega.
The Iron Fingers.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, that was good. So, you know, three new champions on this show. Three out of the four title matches resulted in new champions, obviously with the Dark Arts title vacant. I really liked how the Dark Arts title again has its own rule set as well.
Yes, definitely. Yeah,
setting it apart from the rest.
Yeah, so it had sort of hallmarks of the pure title, but with a nice twist in the fact that closed fist punches were entirely legal, which I think is that's a rarity in professional wrestling overall, actually.
Irregardless of the sort of current rules, the rules are going to be changing with the new champion, as that's apparently part of the niche of this particular championship.
Oh, good stuff. So if you haven't checked out Pro Wrestling Magic before, look, guys, you're not alone. This is our first time as well, but having watched Kingdom Come, very much enjoyed that. Recommend you check it out. It's up on Fight TV now. Why not look these guys up online? So you can find them on Twitter. It's at Wrestling Magic. It's a pretty decent Twitter handle, isn't it? At Wrestling Magic. It's got all the information of their shows and where you can check things out. So yeah, great stuff from Pro Wrestling Magic. Thoroughly enjoyed, and we will, of course, be back. Heading into the second half of the show, stick around because we've got Gary Cassidy with us and we're going to be talking about Hard to Kill We Move.
And we're back. And we're joined by Gary Cassidy, the lead writer for Inside the Ropes. Thanks for joining us today, Gary.
No, thank you for having me. It's always nice to get to talk about stuff that isn't WWE and AEW, because as much as I love them, there is a lot more out there that you don't really get to write about quite so
Absolutely.
Often or cover so much. So yeah, delighted to be here and talk about something a little bit different for a change.
Good man. I mean, tell us a bit about yourself, Gary. How did you get into wrestling journalism?
Yeah, so bizarre one, but I'll try and do the most whistle-stop tour ever of it. about 10 years ago, I studied, it was media, but it was majoring in journalism at university. Really thought I wanted to be, you know, a journalist without really knowing what a journalist was and only really kind of knowing it was writing news. Went and done some journalism, a wee bit of work experience at a couple of tabloid newspapers, and realised it was not what I wanted to do at all whatsoever. Completely Right. Take me out of journalism. Get me away from here. I don't want to be, you know, jailed for 2 years for saying something potentially libelous about someone and all that kind of thing. So I gave up. Was really into, you know, and I still, up until lockdown, really was into going to gigs and stuff like that, you know, going to a lot of live music events, comedy, stuff like that, and writing about those. So I've done a wee bit of music journalism. It's the kind of thing, if anyone's ever done music journalism in any way, they will know there is almost no money in it unless you're absolutely incredible at it, and it's a really hard thing to break into. Oddly, wrestling's kind of the same, but it kind of fell into my lap that I ended up in like a job that, you know, wasn't quite so time consuming, to put it nicely. I'd worked in retail and all that before when I was trying to graft away. So I ended up in a job where I still do it, where it's broadcast subtitling. And I was just finding that I love doing that. It was quite good, like honing skills that I didn't actually learn in university about, you know, punctuation and sentence structure and stuff like that. Learned a lot about that in subtitling, and I was like, I really want to start writing again. Before I was Inside the Ropes, I wrote for Sportskeeda, and I ended up writing for them because I was scrolling through Facebook, had liked a few wrestling pages purely because I'd started watching it again after a wee bit of a time away, keeping up with it, but a wee bit of time not actually watching it live. And I was like, wait a minute, you can write about wrestling? That's a thing? Wrote my first ever article, which was about what Premier League football team John Cena supported.
What was the answer?
It was Spurs, weirdly what? Enough. Only because he'd been invited.
Spurs?
Yeah, I know, as if you needed another reason to hate John Cena.
Yeah, there you go.
I say that, I actually love John Cena, but
yes.
No comment on Spurs. so I wrote that article and I was like, oh, this is, you know, that's quite enjoyable. Mm-hmm. Got the bug again and then wrote for about, I think, 6 months, you know, just those kind of nonsensical fun stories, but stories that people don't really care too much about. By some weird coincidence, you know, I was doing the thing where you aggregate news, which we all still do, you know, writing news from different outlets. And I picked up an article about Elias being sponsored by Fender Guitar and his comments on being sponsored by Fender Guitar. And I just suddenly got an email from a guy called Darren Paltrowitz, who's a really good journalist who had interviewed Elias to write that piece. And he's like, hey, man, if there's ever anything I can do for you, let me know. I really appreciate you covering that, because my boss didn't actually think it was going to do any reads because it's wrestling. And it was in a guitar magazine. It was like Total Guitar or something like that.
Interesting.
One of those things where you're like, everyone says that. It's, you know, just a nice gesture. And then he's like, no, I can get you an interview with either Jim Ross or Diamond Dallas Page. And I was like, well, I'll take Diamond Dallas Page. I was the biggest WCW fan as a kid. You know, if I only ever interview Diamond Dallas Page, if it goes terribly wrong and I've still at the end of it went, oh, I got to speak to Diamond Dallas Page, I've came out of this better than I thought I ever would. So I've done that interview, got the bug, and then just done a load of interviews since. And, you know, here we are, whatever, 3-4 years later, getting to say that I'm the lead writer for Inside the Ropes, which, you know, it's brilliant because I'm a very small part of a very good team, and, you know, get to just kind of watch things that I go, oh, this is satisfying, actually seeing, you know, things go well, getting to see the brand build, because obviously it's a brand that you guys will know being part of this podcast. Kenny has done a great job with it, so doing everything you can not to ruin his good work is great fun. It's great fun. So, yeah, I've tried to convince 10 hours in a couple of minutes and probably overran the full length of the podcast. So, I apologize for
that. That's good stuff. And I think one thing I've spotted from you quite a lot on social media is journalism's often considered to be a bit of a murky industry, but you seem to make a real point of having quite a lot of integrity about it, making sure, you know, sources are cited and it's real proper news as opposed to quote unquote clickbaity stuff.
Yeah, that's one thing that, and thank you because I appreciate that. I'm not sure everyone would agree with you in terms of that that opinion of me, but I'll take it from anyone willing to say it.
Well, I've only known you a couple of months.
Yeah, so. Yeah, just wait. By the end of this chat, you'll be like, oh, Kenny, get that guy out of here. For me, it's the kind of thing where, you know, I did mention that where I went to uni, studied journalism, and it was just always the kind of thing that I got drilled into my head was, if you're going to, you know, put out rumours for a start, you know, I know that it's the kind of thing that people are like, don't put out rumours. A lot of news comes from rumour, you know, you can't really just avoid rumours completely in journalism in any way. But if you're going to put out a rumour is only as credible as the source it's come from. And I know that, you know, that's not always the case. People that haven't a great track record can get things right and that kind of thing. But you need to give people as much information as possible so they can at least make an informed decision, you know. Yeah. I don't want to put out a story where I could, you know, in theory, put out an article from a different outlet and not mention that outlet. But then the accountability falls on me. So if it's right or it's wrong, it's just unfair, you know, in terms of everything. It's unfair for everybody, and that's...
yeah.
Know what anyone wants from journalism. So yeah, the only things that I always say is if you're gonna put something out there, at least put where it's come from. That the main thing you can do. And I hate terms like, you know, dirt sheets and stuff like that, but I get why people say it, because journalism, especially in wrestling, has always been seen as that kind of thing, you know. Reporting on deaths and stuff like that is something no one wants to do. But the best thing we can do is try and do it in the most fair, balanced way possible. So that's one thing that I always strive to do. I'm not going to, you know, lie and say that I do it perfectly every time, because it's for other people to judge. But it's the kind of thing that all we can do is strive to do and hold ourselves accountable and let other people hold us accountable as well. So hopefully after people listen to this, they don't go through all my articles and come back to me on Twitter and go, oh, that guy's absolutely terrible. Doesn't he know what he's talking about? Get him out of there. But we'll see.
Our listeners will be coming at you with their receipts.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, no, it's fine, because normally when I'm on podcasts, people can already tell that I've got quite a strong accent. So my hope is they just can't understand what I'm saying. And then that means that nothing I say is ever held accountable against me. So
inadmissible.
It's a smart tactic, actually. Yeah.
Just speak quickly. No one will understand. We're all good.
Let them have it. Yeah. Just Tell us a bit about your relationship with Impact, because that was one of the, you know, apart from your sort of notoriety in the space, one of the reasons we wanted to get you on was because you've had so many sort of interviews with Impact and seem to have quite a good relationship with them. So what's your, what have your dealings been with that company?
Yeah, it's a bit of a bizarre one because, like I said, there was quite a big gap where I didn't watch wrestling weekly. And annoyingly, the kind of TNA boom period falls into that. So I'm probably one of the few people that doesn't watch Impact for nostalgia reasons, which is, you know, probably, you know, for better or worse, I guess, because it means that I look at it with, I guess, a fresh set of eyes. But annoyingly, I missed all the AJ Styles stuff when it was in Impact. Only I've seen select things for that. Samoa Joe, obviously, I've went back and watched like bits and bobs here and there. But yeah, I kind of missed all that. I even missed when Grado was there, you know, guy who's from the same area as me. I missed everything there. So I've been trying to go back and piece bits together. But essentially, I don't really remember how it all started. I remember that I ended up on a, they do Press Pass, which it's a really kind of unique thing for anybody that hasn't seen it. It's open for anyone to watch, just not for anyone to join. But Impact got into a habit of doing press conference style media calls where they would have originally two opponents that were going to, you know, clash at a pay-per-view and you'd go on and ask a couple of questions to each. My first one was with Killer Cross and Johnny Impact, which was great fun. I'd mentioned about, you know, making sure you don't make mistakes. I made a mistake on that one where I was like, oh, you call yourself the insurance. I think I can't remember what his nickname was. It was like the insurance something. And he was like, actually, I don't call myself. This was Killer Cross in full character. He's like, I don't call myself that. But a commentator, whoever it was, had said that I didn't watch Impact at that time. I'd been asked to jump on that call as a stand-in for somebody like half an hour beforehand.
Oh, gosh.
Tried to cram in as much as I knew possible. And then I was like, you know, I knew Johnny Impact because not even from WWE. I knew him because I watched a lot of Lucha Underground. It's like my favorite promotion ever. So I was like, I guess I should maybe start paying attention to this Impact stuff. I'd watched a wee bit, you know, fell in love with the character of Killer Cross. He was absolutely brilliant. And then just ever since, I've been kind of, you know, doing a wee bit here and there, but towards the end of my time at SportsGuida, essentially, I got asked to take over as just the guy that done the Impact interviews. So I ended up with, you know, I don't think it's really peeling back the curtain, but in the UK, we normally have a UK PR guy that we go to, our PR team overall. Because I wasn't writing for a UK outlet, you know, at first I was dealing with him because I went to him directly, but then I ended up with the US team. So I was actually getting different interviews for the UK guys just because it's a different schedule. So yeah, it ended up great because the one thing that I absolutely love that I got to do, everyone always talks about, you know, how journalists are desperate to get, you know, news out there and all that kind of thing. We all know Impact's taped. I got let in on the secret that Eric Young was winning the World Championship on live TV, or not live TV, but on TV later that night, and interview him beforehand to release the interview literally the second it happened. And then, you know, just Eric Young being back there. I'm a huge fan of Eric Young. I love Diona Perrazzo, love the Good Brothers. So the way it is just now, I think it's like one of my favourite promotions to watch every week. So seemingly, I think I've done the backwards thing from everyone else with Impact, but it's somehow worked out and I love it anyway.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That's really interesting because, as you say, most people probably jump in, you know, with the classic AJ Styles, Daniels, Joe sort of thing and kind of sort of dipping it out from there. That's really interesting. But if you are going to join late, like, now is probably the time because the roster is probably about as good as it's ever been. It's a pretty exciting promotion to dabble in.
Yeah, I basically dipped out after once Hogan and Bischoff turned up and Jeff Hardy came back, and I was just like, nah. And I just like graduated university. I was just like, nah, I'm out. And then it's only just now that I've, in the last, 9 months, I've come back just because, you know, it sounded like they were starting to sort of fire on all cylinders again.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of things that I'm glad I missed out on as well. I think, you know, no one will begrudge me saying that, I don't think. But yeah, I coincidentally, I think, started watching again properly, like paying attention properly, right as Scott D'Amore and Don Callis got put into the EVP position by some odd coincidence. That's when I started watching again. So it's been amazing getting to, I think it's 3 years now, it's watching that journey and the way they went from that to, you know, for me, the turning point. No pun intended there, because Turning Point isn't the actual event that happened at. But the turning point for me was Slammiversary and seeing everyone tune into that. And it was just like, looking at that, you know, as someone that's just kind of been covering it on the outskirts, but looking at that and going, those two guys, and obviously everyone on the roster, but their hard work has really paid off here.
Yeah.
And we can see it now with the AEW partnership, which that puts you guys in a nice, unique position, because we cover Impact, but it's like, do we cover AEW now? Can we,
They've come to us, can we get away with it?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. To be fair, I think D'Amore and Callis probably don't get enough credit for the job they've done, you know, particularly from what they inherited as well. It wasn't necessarily in the best of shapes, but they've done a fantastic job. And it's one of those things where they weren't necessarily doing things that were getting big ratings, and that I don't know that that was within their power either way. But what they were doing were steering a very consistent and enjoyable ship. And it just seems to have been an accumulative effect that gradually more and more eyes have come to the product. And now, with the little jump start that's come from this AEW link up, they're finally getting there. They're getting back to where they once were. And yeah, I hope they keep going, because it's the product of recent has been really, really good. It deserves to do well.
Yeah, that's one thing that I always say, where it's like, you know, it's taken them 3 years to become an overnight success. But it's because they've built, I know, a lot of talents we will talk about that were featured on the card, but they've built a lot of talents that, you know, people who are just tuning in just now to see people like the Good Brothers and obviously Kenny Omega might see these talents and go, oh man, I've been missing out. Why have I not been watching Impact to see, you know, people like Ace Austin, people like Chris Bay, and a lot more in the Knockouts division as well.
Absolutely. All right, let's jump into this Hard to Kill show then. So one of the things, I think we've covered Impact maybe two or three times since the podcast started. And I think it's fair to say, Gareth, correct me if I'm wrong, that our sort of general feeling for the shows in 2020 was that they're good overall shows that are perhaps guilty of starting a bit too slowly. And the sort of first hour, maybe sometimes the first 2 hours of the show, maybe took a little bit too long to start firing. But the last hour, generally the top three matches, absolutely delivered. And then we felt like we saw a bit of a rotation in the last show, Genesis, where actually as a whole show, it flew by. It really did have a nice rhythm to it. The whole tournament setup really worked. And if you start to wonder if they've maybe turned a corner and we're turning up the heat. So Gareth, I'll come to you first on this. With Hard to Kill, did we continue on that trend, or do you think we took a step backwards?
I think we went back to 2020 in the sense that it was a card of two distinct halves, in that you had, you know, half a card of really strong matches and half a card of so-so matches, from my perspective.
Interesting. Okay. Gary, what was your take on the whole thing?
Yeah, it's a bit of an odd one, because I feel like Impact, the pacing is the one thing that I normally pick up on, go, sometimes they get it really right, sometimes they get it really wrong. I think they get it a lot better on weekly television than they do for pay-per-views overall. But I thought the same. The one thing that I should say, full disclosure, is that the first kind of 20 minutes of the pay-per-view, I was hampered watching it by the WrestleMania news that came out 5 minutes before. So that might have clouded my judgment, but I wasn't really as attentive as I could have been for the first 20 minutes of the card. But I think overall it was, you know, quite good. I really liked Genesis. I thought Genesis was a brilliant show overall.
Yeah,
I think this one was really good, but there were some notable dips. But again, I think the stuff that was really good made up for it.
Yeah, I think if you look at it as, you know, did the really good stuff drag it up, or did the sort of less good stuff drag it down? It got dragged up. You know, the stuff at the top end of the card was really, really good. I think I don't like to offer criticism without some sort of constructive element to it. So if it were me, in hindsight, I think I'd probably shave off the first two matches. The Decay versus Caleb with a K and Tennille Dashwood was fine, no problems with it whatsoever, but it just felt like it didn't really have a point or a place on that show. And then the old school rules match, You know, if we're talking Dina versus Cousin Jake, that feels like a match that should be on a pay-per-view. But although I did enjoy this, I don't know if it needed to be here. And then perhaps what you may have had is a little bit more time to brief with, like, the Knockouts tag team final, which felt fleeting to me, even though it was, you know, perfectly fine match. It just felt a little bit quick. And I think my only other real criticism, if anything, would be that the Matt Cardona introduction probably didn't need to be a match. I think as sort of wrestling fans, we've been conditioned to take disqualifications and count outs as a bit underwhelming. And to have him come in and his first win be a count out, maybe just have him interrupt promo and beat the guy up, and that would have been just as effective. But, you know, I do think this is a better home for Cardona than AEW would have been. And I'm, you know, Impact's really been the sort of pool of reincarnation for so many guys from WWE. You look at Drew McIntyre, Christian as good examples of that. I'm quite excited to see if he can completely rebuild and where he goes with a little bit more creative levity here.
I was a little bit concerned about sort of pairing him off against Ace Austin here, who I feel Austin is in ascendance, and I don't feel like if these guys are going to face off again, both men really need to win. There's no good outcome here. It's just a bad matchup. There had to have been somebody else on the card they could have, you know, put Cardona up against here, but is what it is, isn't it?
Yeah, that's probably fair, actually, particularly coming off Genesis and, you know, winning the X Cup. Maybe Ace Austin wasn't the right guy, although I would say that I did enjoy their exchanges.
Yes. But absolutely.
From a results perspective, is it really going to help either man? Not so sure. But let's focus on the positives, of which there were plenty. Why don't we just start at the top and work our way down? So, you know, the main event was absolutely bananas, and I thought this is a really fun way to finish the show. I think it went sort of 20 plus minutes, and just every exchange was great. I loved all the little pairings that you got in there.
Yes.
Particularly the one at the start with Machine Gun Karl Anderson and Chris Sabin. It's a match I didn't know I wanted to see, but I do now, because they were fantastic together.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Yeah, like you say, them sort of pairing off the sort of relevant parties worked really well. I thought Moose more than held his up his end of the bargain here. I'm a real big fan of Alex Shelley, so I was pretty disappointed when I heard he wasn't going to be able to make this. I do hope at some point we maybe still get that match down the line with Shelley involved. But yeah, I really enjoyed this. I thought everybody more than held their own, and I don't think it's going to be the end of things.
No,
there's more to come.
Could you make an argument that Moose came out of this the best? Because I felt like he looked like an absolute star throughout this one. You know, some of the moves he was pulling off were just absolutely mental. And
Gary's,
I don't
mate.
Know, he just seemed like the guy. Yeah. You spoke to him recently, didn't you, actually?
Yeah. Ironically, during the chat, he said that he didn't really care to be in the ring with Kenny Omega, but he really wanted to be in the ring with Rich Swann. Yeah. Because I tried to, you know, one of those ones I was like, you are the real world champion. Don't you think you should be the guy that's facing the AEW world champion? But I think, you know, a lot of people are complaining that, oh my God, Impact had the world champion pinned clean as a sheet in the middle of the ring. It's like, it was pinned by Kenny Omega. Come on, it's not a disgrace to anyone. And the fact that now Moose can say, look, I more than held my own in that match. Mm. I should be the guy that is holding, you know, the Impact TNA world championship. Get the belts, you know, get them put together and get all that on the go. But the match was just absolutely phenomenal. I think, you know, would it have been better with Alex Shelley in it? Maybe not. I think Moose done a great job. But yeah, Chris Sabin is absolutely fantastic. I love him. I'm a huge fan of the Good Brothers anyway. And I mean, Kenny Omega's amazing. I think Rich Swann is a guy who's not been getting enough credit for how good he is in the ring. Yeah. He only recently recovered from like breaking his back. The guy was told he might never wrestle again. And I know that that's a kind of cliche story we're all too used to hearing. But when you think of, you know, what actually happened to him injury-wise, it is a bit of a miracle that he not only wrestling again, he's a world champion. I don't think there's any harm in him getting pinned by Kenny Omega. I thought he came out looking brilliant. I think no one in that match, looking at the six names, I don't think anyone came out looking bad in any way.
No, not at all.
Even at that, you know, I love to say, oh, it was a great match for this or that, you know, the moves that happened and pinpoint them. We've seen probably just on paper one of the most like groundbreaking matches we'll see in wrestling, maybe for the rest of this decade, and we're only 1 year in. So I think that alone, the fact they pulled off and you know, had a match befitting of what it was on paper, I think was absolutely amazing. So it's the kind of match the rest of the pay-per-view could have been absolutely rotten. If I'd have watched this match purely because it was the last match, I'd have been like, that was a great pay-per-view.
and to speak to that point, I watched the majority, basically the entire show bar the main event yesterday, and was kind of like, this is a decent show, there's things I like. I watched the main event today, I was like, wow, that was a good show. That was good. that main event was so crazy. But yeah, you're absolutely right. One thing I did want to put to you both, because, you know, by no fault of his own, Rich Swann, as a champion, probably doesn't feel quite the same tier as Omega. Did this match help remedy that to any extent?
I'm not sure. I think the thing with Rich Swann, I'm not sure how much of it is maybe presentation, and I would even put his own presentation in there because he's not very active on social media, not active at all on social media, actually. And, you know, the last that most people who don't watch Impact will know of him was as, you know, maybe cruiserweight champion in WWE, and then not doing too much towards the end of that. Dancing with Sasha Banks, I guess, was his biggest moment in WWE for most people. So I'm not sure if it's purely a presentation thing or maybe just people that haven't seen a lot of him in Impact. But it is a bit of an odd one because, you know, personal feelings here, I really liked Eric Young as champion. But I did think the story was right for him to drop the belt to Rich Swann. In hindsight, maybe if they'd have done that a while before, I would have maybe had someone like a Chris Bay as the champion for this match, just because of the matchup with Omega. But again, that might just be a personal thing. Other people might be like, well, Chris Bay is probably the same level in terms of mainstream name. But I think Rich Swann comes out of the match, you know, he's just been pinned by Kenny Omega, but he somehow comes out of that match looking bigger than he was in terms of being, you know, a credible wrestler. Even though he's credible to him and everyone that matters, I think to the people that have just tuned in for that match, he comes out looking more credible. And yeah, I guess it's all where he goes for here, but that's the most lame answer I'm ever going to give you. but I think as long as it results in him v Moose in a rivalry where they both kind of put the titles on the line, I think it works out for the best.
It feels like it's been a bit of a revolving door when it comes to the Impact world title the last sort of year, really. You know, it hasn't sort of stayed with any one person for too long.
Yeah, because I suppose Eddie Edwards had a relatively short reign as well, didn't he? Yeah. Interesting. I suppose one thing that I definitely feel coming out of this one is that I would really love to see those two guys wrestle one-on-one. The exchanges between Swann and Omega were just, you know, insane. And if they can manufacture a way to maybe have Rich invade Dynamite a few times and, you know, build him up in the lead up to the next Impact pay-per-view, which you think could well have those two guys headlining it, particularly with Omega's symbol kind of on the logo, quite sneakily hidden in there, and a golden star for that matter, but I won't read too much into that. That would be just great. And they've got a really, you know, you have to think that Omega would probably take that. So then what do Impact do? Well, luckily enough, they have the real TNA champion there to step into the main event. And you've got your sort of ready-made feud there with Swann and Moose. So in a sense, it feels like it's lined up really nicely. And I've often said I don't feel like wrestling needs to surprise constantly. Sometimes you can kind of see what's coming. And if it's delivered correctly, then that's just as satisfactory. So yeah, that's, I think there's so much good that's going to come out of this. And it felt like a big event watching it, that's for sure.
I think to Gareth's point, the thing for me with the Impact World Championship is it has been, I wouldn't say hot potatoes because it's not been that bad, but I feel like they thought Tessa Blanchard was going to be the big star and hold that title for a long time, and they've struggled to find that since. However, if you put that title on Kenny Omega and then have an Impact star beat him, whoever that star is, they're going to look like a champion. So I think that is definitely, you know, something that a lot of people might not want Omega to hold the Impact World Championship I would love to see it.
Yeah,
if they do that, I mean, that is just instant star maker there, because whoever pins him as the champion.
Who's your pick, Gary? If you had to pick somebody, you've got, you know, 3 or 4 months to build him up. Who's your guy?
People wouldn't like it, but I would go for a face Ace Austin. Yeah. I would. The guy's been carrying, you know, quite a lot of the company up until Slammiversary, I think, and not got the credit he deserves. Him or Chris Bay, but I love Chris Bay with that heelish tendency. So yeah. I think a face Ace Austin would be ideal for me.
Yeah, two good picks.
One of the things I am really enjoying about Impact is they've got these guys that feel like they're just bubbling under, that given just the right sort of booking and right sort of treatment, could be huge breakout stars and main event players for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk about the Chris Bay match then. So that was the X Division three-way with Manic and Rohit Raju in there as well. What was your take on this one, Gary?
Firstly, I loved that the next day I saw an article from an outlet who will remain nameless with Manic Unmasked. And it's like, come on, no. Don't try and clickbait that.
Really?
The least surprising masked man since Mr. America.
It was just like, come on. But yeah, for me, this was the match that beforehand I said I thought would possibly steal the show. I'm not going to go that far because, I mean, the main event, nothing's gonna compare to the main event. For me, this is the kind of match that people might have watched and not really known too much about the competitors, because if you've not watched Impact, you might not have known who Manic was even, never mind the other two. Rohit Raju, again, one of those champions where he got, you know, got the title and a lot of people are like, why, who? But he done amazing work with it once he got the title. And it was one of those ones where he got the title at a point where, you know, mainstream eyes were just starting to go on Impact and people had missed his best work. Although he done his best work, admittedly, after he won the title again. I'm not sure it was the match that I'd have had here. I'm not sure Chris Bay being in the match, storyline-wise, actually, was the best idea. If you're going to put him in the match, as you can tell, I'm a huge Chris Bay fan. I would have had him come out with the title.
Yeah,
it's a bit of an odd one for me in terms of the booking of the match. But if I completely ignore all of that, I really enjoyed the match. I really enjoyed watching it, but there's just things that beforehand I'd have maybe done differently. But that's why I'm not a wrestling booker, because the match would have probably been horribly wrong if I'd have booked a really poor watch. But yeah, I just think these three guys, I don't think you'll find three different talents. Rohit Raju and Chris Bay couldn't be further apart in terms of what they bring to a wrestling promotion, but both obviously bring a lot. I really did like it. I thought it's one of those ones where it's the opposite problem as we normally get, where this was in the position before the main event that it was kind of set up to, not to fail, but set up that people would be like, oh, just get the main event on. But I really liked it. I thought it was really enjoyable and, you know, one of the better matches on the card, I would say, apart from the main event, definitely. Probably my favourite apart from the main event, which was untouchable.
Yep, don't disagree. G-Money?
Yeah, mechanically, super strong match. But yeah, like Gary was saying, just some of the kind of creative maybe left a little bit of a bad taste in my mouth. You know, nothing too bad. But, you know, I would have just rather sort of Chris Bay come out here or just do straight up Manic, Rohit, perhaps. But, you know, like, I just think with potentially the most eyeballs you've had on the product since Slammiversary, if not before, with Kenny wrestling here, you know, you want to put your best foot forward. And I'm not sure that this necessarily was that, you know, in terms of being a thoroughly entertaining match, yes. But yeah, I think the creative here could have maybe been a little bit better.
We've been saying for a while that the X Division really needs to be about Jordynne Grace going forward. You know, she feels like she's kind of outgrown the Knockouts division, and actually she's a perfect fit for the X Division and her style and what she brings. And I know she's doing the stuff with Jazz and absolutely loved her match with Jazz at Genesis. I would have almost loved to see her in here, you know, make it a four-way. And as Gareth said, with all those extra eyeballs, let her walk away with it. Yep. If we're not going to give it to Chris Bay, then let's give it to Jordynne Grace and let's see what happens there.
I think that's one of the biggest missed opportunities that Impact have had, where they had her, you know, win in inverted quotes the title. And I mean, it got me because I was like, oh man, this is amazing. And then I was absolutely furious that Rohit Raju was the champion, which is great, you know, great heel booking. But I really thought that after that, they should have had her emerge with the title in the actual 5-6-person match. I forget how many people was in it now. But yeah, adding her to this would have been, you know, yeah, just put the title on. Jordan Grace is phenomenal. Just put the title on her anyway.
Definitely, definitely. All right, speaking of knockouts, this was probably the match that I was, but beyond the main event, most looking forward to going in, which was Deonna Purrazzo and Taya Valkyrie. And I don't know, this one just didn't click for me. And I think I probably had sky-high expectations going in. And with the benefit of hindsight and knowing what we know as we record today, that Taya Valkyrie sort of wrestled her last match for Impact, so which perhaps speaks to the relatively decisive nature of the outcome, I just didn't feel like this one got going. But what did you guys think?
Yeah, I think for me, I was really surprised when the match got put together in the first place. You know, I know that put anyone from the Knockouts division in there with Deonna Purrazzo and you're probably going to get a good match anyway.
She's a revelation, isn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah, oh man, I think if we based 2020 on only the second half of 2020, I think she's probably been the standout performer maybe across all promotions. But for me, even when they announced this match, I was like, something doesn't quite add up for me. Obviously, knowing what we know now, it makes sense. You know, the longest reigning Knockouts champion ever being decisively beaten as the best way to put over the new champion.
Definitely.
Yeah, what a feather in her cap.
Yeah, I think that the only problem is that, you know, we already know Deonna Purrazzo's amazing, so she didn't really need it. But yeah, it was fine. I think I'm the same, hampered by huge expectations, you know, thinking it was going to be the best match ever when, obviously, when we even compare it to the last few Deonna Purrazzo matches, I think nothing for a long time is going to beat that Iron Man match at all. That was absolutely phenomenal.
100%.
It was a fine match. And for what it is, if it was a passing of the torch and, you know, longest reigning champion putting over the new champion, I'm fine with it. Completely fine with it.
Yep, fair enough.
Isn't it wild that she was in the WWE system for all that time and they just did less than nothing with her?
It's remarkable, really. And that,
you know, from my perspective, you know, we've seen this slate of new female signings today to NXT, and it's just, you know, like they're just stockpiling talent there. And if they had a Deonna Purrazzo over there doing nothing, I get the financial stability of signing with WWE. But in terms of if you want to do your best work, it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, I think, the most bizarre thing for me is I think they caught themselves in a really difficult position with Deonna because they had her compete on Raw and then decided that she was, you know, more than good enough to be on Raw as an enhancement talent, but not good enough to be in the main event of the NXT women's division picture, which I'm like, that's a really tricky niche to fit someone into. For me, she's always going to be one of the biggest missed opportunities that they've had because, man, if you told me just now that we could have like a Deonna Purrazzo versus, you know, Bayley or Charlotte or Sasha Banks, Io Shirai, man, I would absolutely love to see any of those matches. But then if I think back to the way that we saw Deonna Purrazzo wrestle, and, you know, not through any fault of her own, but the kind of the length of match and how decisive the victories overall were, I'm like, I don't need to see them. So I think a lot of credit to her and Impact because,
definitely,
man, she's became probably one of the top female talents in the world by going there.
Could be the hottest in North America. Oh, I don't know. It's certainly the top five, I would say.
I think you've just booked a Deonna Purrazzo versus Hikaru Shida match there by saying that.
Yes, please. Yep. Or Thunder Rosa, Britt Baker. Yeah. They're all of it. Let's do it. Let's
go. But I mean, I can't think of a much better recent rehabilitation of somebody than Deonna.
Literally, it would be her or Eric Young. Both at the exact same time frame as well. So
Bodes well for Matt Cardona, though. You know, if he's looking at those two and thinking, okay, well, maybe I can do something here and, you know, reinvent myself a little bit.
Yeah, so. I think Cardona's ceiling is probably a lot higher in Impact than it would have been in AEW.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, I think it's at least at World Championship, which I'm not sure it would have been in AEW. So.
Yeah, I'm pulling for him. I've always liked him, so yeah, fingers crossed.
Super likable guy. You want to see him succeed. My worry is that I don't want to see him succeed at the expense of other really interesting emergent talent within Impact.
Like his opponent.
Yeah, exactly. Like precisely.
So we touched on it with Taya having wrestled her last match with Impact. What's your take, Gary? Where do you think she's going next?
I am going to be completely cynical and say that because she is, you never like revealing a lady's age, but obviously Wikipedia is a thing. She's 37 years old. Mm-hmm. I think has still, you know, she looks great in the ring, but I think we would more likely see her go to WWE with the view of being in that competitor slash coach role. But I don't know, because, I mean, I don't want to, you know, be that guy that is every guy on the internet right now. AEW could really do with some more women.
Absolutely.
So could do with a leader, that's for sure. And, you know, you always wonder if she'd go in and sort of, you know, put the captain's armband on and take it forward. But yeah, I tend to agree. Sort of cynically, you can see an obvious role for her in WWE, and I would like to see her against some of the talent that they've got there as well. So
I would love them to just pair her up with Miz and Morrison for a bit. Just that would be absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it's kind of there for the taking, isn't it? Yeah. So yeah, no, I don't disagree.
That's for me one of the things that was really good about this show was how featured the knockouts division was. You know, you had three matches where you had sort of knockouts appearing on a nine match card, so you know, like a third of the card, I think is really good. The Impact Knockouts Tag Team Title Tournament Final, Fire and Flavor against Havoc and Nevaeh. I really enjoyed that, but the ending just felt so sudden. My only qualm with that. I'd love to have seen that. Maybe have a couple more minutes and a slightly longer finishing stretch.
Yeah, couple more minutes, and I think production needed to make the freshly minted commentary team of Matt Stryker and D'Lo Brown aware of what was coming, because they were talking about something completely different. And then the pinfall happened, and it really did feel like a bit of like, oh, did they win? And
just to make it feel real. That's the only reason they've done that.
And I thought those two did a very good job, actually, across the board. I thought they were quite enjoyable. But yeah, that would be my only thing. But yeah, it was a fun match. I was actually really impressed with Havoc. I haven't seen a huge amount of Havoc, and I thought some of her offense looked really cool. The Fire and Flavor, it's bloody hard not saying Fire and Desire, isn't it? But Fire and Flavor, I think, were definitely the right people to go over here.
Yes.
And they're just tons of fun, loads of charisma. Really, really interested to see where this goes next. You know, there's a really great knockouts division there. So we got to make sure we got challenges in both the singles and the tag divisions, and we don't want this one to fall by the wayside. So, you know, I'm hoping to see the likes of Team C-Stars back in Impact, and I think they'd make for a good set of challenges in the future.
My one huge criticism of this match is that a few months ago we saw an amazing match between these four women, and it was, I believe, no disqualification, which for me, that, you know, any match like that will instantly feel bigger than even a tournament final that happens a few months later, because, you know, higher risk in the match. But I remember, I got to interview Nevaeh like the night before that match, and because we'd heard the rumors, every single interview I got, I was like, so the Knockouts tag team titles, eh? And trying to get a wee bit on that. And I was saying, you know, this would be the perfect final, and she's like, yeah, it would be. And I'm like, oh, I kind of wish that had been the final, because it was probably a better match would be just the most simplistic way to say it. But I thought it was the right four people to have in this match in terms of, you know, actually having the two teams that have been the two most established teams in Impact.
Yeah.
I would have kind of liked it to be Jordan Grace and Jazz in the final that we're losing, and then have their blow off match at the next pay-per-view. But I don't really have any complaints. I do think no matter what happened, we got the right outcome. And I think having the titles back is incredible, but also having, you know, Kira Hogan is someone that I've been saying for a while probably should have gold around her waist.
Yeah.
Having the tag team titles on her and having Tasha Steeles there, who is equally as entertaining, and they're both great in the ring, I think is just brilliant. So can't wait to see what they do with that. And yeah, like Gareth said, a really heavy knockouts, heavy card. Hopefully more of the same is going to be coming, because if they've got these titles, then there's no excuse not to do it. We know another promotion has not used their women's tag team titles so well, so hopefully the same thing doesn't happen.
Well, a little bit of fantasy booking here then. So if I was to go next, you know, what with the borders having swung wide open between Impact and AEW, you know, there's a couple of women there walking around with some tag team medals that I wouldn't mind seeing coming over here looking for some belts, particularly if they're to reference the real life relationship between Kira Hogan and Diamante. Wouldn't that be cool? You know, reference that relationship and let that whole thing play out. I think you got something really interesting there.
Just ignore the fact that I was completely oblivious to where you were going with that and then realized that they were in a relationship and went, oh yeah, wait, Diamante in it.
So I think they have dropped a couple of hints about that on social media since Saturday.
Why not, eh? You know?
So I think that's the way to go, isn't it? Like, that seems, we've said before, just because you're going in the obvious direction, it doesn't make it the bad direction.
I would love that match, but at the same time, I think Ty Conte and Anna Jay have looked fantastic.
Yes.
And also, I mean, Britt Baker and Rebbe, whatever you
never know what to call her.
Yeah, there you go. That I think that's the kind of thing that, you know, we've criticised AEW's women's division, but if you had those tag titles defended on, you know, Dynamite or Dark, you could firmly establish quite a lot of women very quickly as being, definitely, you know, contenders for those titles and AEW, NWA and Knockouts Championship. Just blood all the lines, chuck them all together and make everything better.
Absolutely. It's exciting. I love this.
It's just so nice, like, how porous these kind of borders are kind of becoming in sort of North American professional wrestling.
Yeah, and you have to think as well that, you know, if travel restrictions weren't in place and, you know, the world was as it was, that you'd have some sort of Japanese influence as well, be it Tokyo Yoshipro or DDT or whatever, you know. So there's probably more in this to come. There's even more upside to this kind of stance of let's all work together, unity, which is great. One that I'm desperate to get both of your opinion on here is the Karate Man Ethan Page match.
I knew that was coming. I could see the smirk as soon as you started saying that sentence. I was like, I know exactly what's coming here.
I want your opinions because I have no idea what mine are.
So I have said many times that I'm the kind of guy that, you know, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. I'm not going to abstain completely, but one thing that I'll say is my reaction to this on Twitter was just how talented Ethan Page is.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly what I thought as well.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think it wasn't the best cinematic match we're ever going to see. That's one thing I think I can say that people will not take too much offence to. But yeah, I'm not sure many people loved it. I can kind of see why they put it on the card.
Yeah.
Kind of. You know, it did offer something completely different, I guess, to everything else that was on the card. But for me, I would have rather that wasn't on the card.
Yeah. What did you reckon, Gareth?
Hard to kill. More like hearts to kill.
Ugh. Hashtag heart to kill. Yeah.
And that's all I've got to say about that.
Understood. Yeah. What really interested me, though, was all the stuff, and you might have even reported on this, Gary, that Ethan Page came out afterwards and he wasn't happy with the edit, and almost as if there's a Snyder cut to this whole thing. I mean, I wonder what he thought it was going to look like relative to what we actually saw.
Yeah, it's the one thing that, you know, I don't really know how much else they could have added to it or removed from it to make it drastically different. But he did not seem happy. I went to try and hunt it down because a lot of people we spoke about, you know, accountability and reporting. A lot of people were just posting. He's posted on social media this, and I'm like, I need to find out what that is before I actually report on it, because it's just a lot of words otherwise. But eventually did get sent the original post, and he accused Impact of being greedy, of lying to him. It was some very strong words. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes next, because if he lands in AEW, yeah. I mean, he might have to deal with him a little bit more than...
This is, you've actually stumbled onto something I wanted to mention here, because if he does land in AEW, as far as we're concerned, as an Impact fan, he's dead. And so's Ali, for that matter.
Yeah.
How do they reference that? Like, we can get Ty Valkyrie out of jail, most likely. You know, Tony Khan's got big money. But how do we bring people back from the dead? You know, do they reference it? Do they not? How much of it remains canon at this point?
Two words: Undertaker gimmick. that's how you bring them back.
yes, like your style. Yeah. Wait, do you think Ethan Page goes there, or is he heading to Stanford?
If I had to venture, I guess I would say WWE. But at the same, I think I'd prefer to see him in AEW. I think he's more suited to AEW. Maybe not after those comments. One thing that's worth noting is that the way his statement came out was due to the podcast or the Facebook group of the podcast of Two Men Who Are in Impact. So it was Brian Myers and Matt Cardona's major wrestling figure podcast, the Patreon group for that podcast. So have I found fun. That a wee bit odd, but yeah. Why enough. Not?
Yeah, why not? All right, well, look, we've gone through practically the whole card, so we may as well finish it off. Barbed wire massacre match. Gareth, we often have mixed feelings about these kind of matches, don't we? But what was your take on this one?
Well, I mean, I had no problems with the match as was. Thought they did a pretty good job here. The Blue Thunder Bomb on the barbed wire chair was like a standout spot for me. Mm. But I do think Eddie Edwards and Sami Callihan are the nerdiest looking guys in Impact Wrestling. Like, neither of them look cool at all.
Gary, we get this all the time, right? This guy, honestly, it takes all the persuasion in the world to get him across the road. Stick a microphone in front of him and he's calling out low key. happens on a weekly basis. I don't know what's
not
going
at all.
On here.
I just think they look like a couple of weenies.
I feel like I can't say anything negative about Eddie Edwards in any way because the Boston Knee Party is the best name of any move ever.
It's very good.
Yeah.
But for me, it's one of the matches that when I seen it getting announced, I was like, not again. Yeah. Like, I don't need to see this again, but I did really enjoy the match.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
I'm not sure what I think of this feud at all because I'm like, obviously, it's came for something real, and I get why they're going to keep going back to it and circling back because, you know, it's the never-ending story. You can just keep referencing how much Eddie Edwards' career changed after that spot.
Absolutely.
For me, I do kind of hope they both move on for a long time now. But again, I felt like that before this match and really enjoyed the match. So,
yeah, no, I don't disagree with anything you said there. I would, in an ideal world, I'd love to see Eddie Edwards get on a plane to Japan and go re-find himself in pro wrestling Noah. You know, he did such a great job over there. He's the only foreigner to ever win the GHC heavyweight title. And they love him there. You know, you see anything he does on Impact referenced in all the sort of Noah Twitter groups and all that sort of stuff. Everybody still loves him. And I think he could almost do that. A little break, do something a bit different, maybe switch up the gear.
Yeah, yes, please.
And then come back, you know, with a fresh coat of paint ready to go. But I just, He's been one of those guys that has helped carry Impact, which he should be applauded for. But I almost worry he's slightly run out of road in terms of what he can do.
That is the perfect way of saying it, because I feel like he has been, for better or worse, the mainstay, the staple of Impact. But I feel like, I don't want to say he's hindered himself, but I sometimes question whether he has hindered himself by being so loyal to Impact. But the one thing that I love, and again, you mentioned maybe going to Japan there, long before any partnership was ever on the table, back when I got to interview the Good Brothers right after they'd signed with Impact. And obviously, I had to ask the question of you guys said that you're New Japan bound as well. And they said that the one thing they'd love to see from a potential partnership was Eddie Edwards versus Tanahashi. And I was like, That is a match that I would love to see. Just give me that match and I would be very happy. They pitched Edwards v. Tanahashi in that interview, and now it's all I can think of anything I see Eddie Edwards.
Well, you know, we've started to see some little inroads into New Japan with Impact Talent, with the Super J Cup recently, Chris Bay competing in that. So, you know, feelings seem to have sort of thawed a little bit between the two companies, because for a while, New Japan wanted nothing to do with Impact.
Yeah, I think it's the kind of thing where, you know, everyone's always going to go back to that thing that happened that we won't mention, where certain New Japan talents did not get treated the best presentation-wise. But I think having Don Callis and having the Good Brothers, and obviously Kenny Omega now as well, being somewhere in the middle of all that, it's like, I'm not sure there's anything that, you know, could be terrible enough that those guys couldn't fix it to make a relationship happen. And part of me still wonders if that was maybe part of the deal of the Good Brothers signing with Impact in the first place. They've maybe went, look, we will sign, but there needs to be something that, one, allows us to go back and forward, that obviously would be the bare minimum. But I often wonder if them, and obviously Rocky Romero as well being, you know, so involved, I wonder if there's something there that what's happened in the world has thrown it all up in there, but maybe we will see something more concrete happen. I think it's more likely than ever. I think people are realizing that no matter how big you are, there's always one company that's a lot bigger. So if you all join together, then maybe you can become bigger than that one
company. Definitely. Definitely. I love how Rocky Romero has become like the nexus for the rest of the world. You know, all roads that's a great analogy. Rocky Road, that's what he is. All right, I think that pretty much wraps us up on Hard to Kill. So overall, good show, some definite high points, main event in particular. We'd encourage you to seek that one out. Pacing issues maybe remain, but look, man, Impact are doing some big things, as Gary said, particularly on the weekly show. You know, do check that out. And it's an exciting time with this whole AEW link up, and who knows what else is going to come from that. Gary, before you go, any socials or anything like that you want to plug?
Yeah, I will always take an opportunity to put myself over. Like I mentioned, my first ever interview was DDP, so I learned from him very, very quickly. The easiest plug I can say is go to itrwrestling.com because we are all part of that. You know, if you support Liam and Gareth's podcast, then of course you probably are aware of it anyway. But if you would like to hear more of me and not have to actually hear my voice, which is quite a big benefit, you can go to Wrestling Gary on Twitter, where I am a complete shell for myself. So any article that I write, if you follow me on there, you'll see it more than once. So that's easiest thing you can do without having to hear a Scottish accent.
Perfect stuff. All right, Gary, thanks so much for your time. Let's have you on again the next time we get in a big Impact show.
Most definitely. Always happy to talk Impact because, you know, I don't get the opportunity to do so quite so often. So definitely give me a shout and I will be back on ready to talk about my undying love for Crispy yet again.
And there we have it. So our thanks once again to the real GC, Gary Cassidy. What a lovely fella he is, and really great to have some of the Inside the Ropes family on the show. That's something that we're going to be exploring a lot more this year, so do stay tuned for that. Okay, so no new section this week because we had quite so much to cover with Gary, so keep an eye on itrwrestling.com for your news, or check out our socials, which I'll give you in a bit. We are posting all sorts of different bits and bobs, so do keep an eye on us for all your news updates. So what's going on next week? Well, that's a great question. We got two very exciting shows to cover. So we're going to be talking about Shine Wrestling, the all-women's promotion, which is part of the World Wrestling Network family. They've got their latest show, Shine 66, which is going to be headlined by Allison Kay and Eva Lise in the main event. Really looking forward to that one.
Should be a goodie. Yeah. I'm looking forward to adding another promotion to our fold.
Hell yeah, we're doing it, baby. And then we're going to go back to an old favourite. We're going to be talking about Choco Pro. It's Choco Pro 85, which is going to be headlined by the tag champs of Bali and Aki, friend of the show, and Mae Segura versus Tropical Amari. Very excited about that one. But. I know what you guys are thinking. Wouldn't it be great if we could listen to Liam and Gareth more than once a week? Well, look, we can't do it all the time because we, you know, you get sick of us, quite frankly, and we get sick of each other. But for this week only, you can do that, because on Thursday, we're going to be dropping an exclusive, fresh, brand new episode, an extra episode, where we're going to be talking to Bali and Aki and Mae Segura, the best bros. It's going to be a feature-length interview. We're going to be talking about all sorts of different stuff, hyping up Choco Pro 85. So if you're going to watch that show, you want to listen to this first, get the inside scoop from Mae and Balian. It's going to be a really fun conversation. I implore you to come along. So that'll be on Thursday. And then the usual episode talking about Choco Pro and Shine 66 is going to be on Friday.
If you've got any questions you'd like us to ask Best Bros, shoot them over to us on our socials. We are at WrestlingPod. That's Wrestling Without the E on Twitter and Instagram. Or you can email us where we're WrestlingPod, again, Wrestling Without the E, at gmail.com. And we'd love to hear any of your thoughts, questions, stuff you'd like us to cover in future.
Hell yeah, absolutely. Okay, so in the meantime, itrwrestling.com is where you need to go to get all your news and updates. InsideTheRopesMagazine.com is where you want to go to get all that fresh magazine smell and all that great information. And then finally, www.shop.itrwrestling.com is the place to go if you want to rep your boys with wrestling podcast merch. We've got shirts, we've got hoodies, we got mugs, all emblazoned with the finest logo in the game, so get on there. Anyway, guys, this has been a crazy episode. Really enjoyed it. Thanks again to Gary. Thanks again for watching. And in the meantime, stay happy, stay safe, and enjoy the graps.